Hey, dude, what's up?
Not me, hardly.
You running like a mad dog there, Hoon?
Oh, man, it was a very, very hot night, and a very short night sleeping-wise.
I have a newborn, I know what that's like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got hit and crashed between like 2:30 and 3, and then we're back up 6:30, so we had to have a rental car back here by noon. So,
nice. Where are you at and what you doing?
Say again?
Where are you at and what you doing, man?
I'm just sitting here in the bedroom. We've got Ridiculous on the TV. Just kind of, the kid's playing games on his phone, and I'm just kind of, we're both just kind of trying to stay awake.
Nice.
Yeah.
So you're the singer in a doom band, and you're also a father at the same time. Some people would say that's a paradox.
Right. Nope, that's the second of those is the most important thing. So.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I am first and foremost.
Yeah, and I hear your son even tells you, hey, that record's not going to write itself.
Yeah.
He's like your manager, man.
I know, he's like my little producer here, you know. We need these sounds here and this sound there.
That's cool.
I just smile and nod, wait for him to go away.
So when did you decide to become a musician? Become a singer? Who were your influences as well?
I saw Kiss on TV when I was 9 years old.
What year was that?
That was 1976.
Damn.
And I knew nothing about music. I listened to a little bit of music. My brother-in-law had given me a Grand Funk single for We're an American Band. He gave me Alice Cooper's Greatest Hits on vinyl. So I had listened to some music, but either see Kiss on TV and see that, you know, comic book come to life kind of thing. That's when I said, I want to do that. I want to do that someday.
It's funny because when I was 5 years old, I heard Alive 3 with my dad, and that made me realize, just hearing the record, not even knowing what they looked like, which obviously when I realized they were on the reunion tour at that time, this was like 97.
Yeah.
And just that music, the way they played, the way the crowd reacted, I was just like, that's what I want to do. It just altered my life. Like at that moment, I knew what I wanted to do.
Well, it was kind of a three-pronged approach. There was three levels to it. Kiss made me want to play music. And then older friends introduced me to Black Sabbath. So that made me want to play dark, heavy music.
I got into Sabbath because neither of my parents liked them, even though my dad was a metalhead.
Yeah.
So that was my rebellion.
And then when I heard Judas Priest.
They were my dad's favorite band, too, so... Gotcha.
So when I heard Halford, that's how I wanted to sound. Once I became exposed to more music and started sort of forming, you know, the approach that I wanted to have and the abilities I wanted to have, my big three were Halford, Ronnie James Dio, and Ronnie Van Zant.
Nice. I definitely catch those vibes from your music, including your acoustic music, which we'll get to later. Everyone knows you were an Iron Man, and we'll get to that, but what were some of your first bands, and how was that style of music maybe different from what you ended up doing later on?
Well, you know, I started That was all, you know, cover bands. Playing the garage and basement parties. Started doing original music years after that, just banging around, but kind of was stuck in the cover thing until I relocated to D.C., by which time I was singing and was a bassist.
Nice.
I mean, different kind of things happen. I was in a band for a while called Phantasm that was kind of horror-influenced. One review we had was Rush meets Metallica, a delightfully vivid nightmare, something like that.
Damn. You know?
I was, you know, just different bands over the years, just banging out, you know, as Spinal Tap put it, mediocre head banging bullshit.
And here's a review for your one album, Shark Sandwich. It's just one, two words, shit sandwich.
Yes. but in the early part of the 90s, I stepped back from singing and just became a bass player for a number of years until I decided it might be fun to sing again, and I joined the Sabbath Tribute.
Nice.
And that required no homework whatsoever. It was mainly odds a year, which was easy as hell for me to do, and it was just fun. And at that point, I kind of thought, well, this is my thing now. I thought at that point, because I was in my mid-30s then, and I just figured, okay, original music is done at this point. But then the Sabbath Tribute started doing original music under a different name, and that's sort of what got me exposed to the Doom scene here. And what got me in touch and introduced to Lewis, and as things came to be, Iron Man needed a singer, and they gave me a call, and the rest is, as they say, history.
Yeah, so the early days of Iron Man, that had to be an exciting time to be a part of the scene and stuff like that. What was your first, like, real... Like, how were you accepted within it, and what was it like in the early days, and just around?
When I went to audition and everything, I didn't know, was it going to be like the movie Rockstar with Marky Mark, to which Steel Dragon was told, basically, you sing the words, we give you. But Al told me straight up, he says, we're not just hiring you for your voice, you know, we know what you bring to the table creatively and as a visionary. And I was given complete creative freedom with what I did in Iron Man. I even asked Al one time when we were writing songs, I had a vocal part that could have gone one way or the other. And I said, dude, what do you think? And he says, man, I'm not in any position to tell you how to sing. And, you know, coming from someone with Al's pedigree, that meant a lot to me.
He knows you. He kind of just, I guess, knew your abilities and knew what you could do and just let you do what your gut told you, which...
Right.
That shows Al's as a human and how I think all bands should kind of operate, honestly.
That's admirable. You know, Al always got compared to Iommi just because of his love for Sabbath and his playing style, his ripping style. But I think another Iommi trait that Al had was Al, like Iommi, had a number of different singers in the band over the years, and Al played to the strengths of those singers. All those singers sounded great.
Yeah.
Even though they had different levels of ability. But Al knew how to write to complement whoever was in a band at the time, and that's what made Sabbath so great over the years, and that's what made Iron Man so great over the years, even though there were the lineup changes. You know, Al played to everybody's strengths, and Al let people be themselves. When somebody came in, he didn't force them or encourage them. You need to sound like the last guy. He let them do their thing. He let me do my thing when I came in.
Yeah.
And that was important. It was important to me to be able to be myself, even within a very established act that Iron Man was.
For sure. And unfortunately, his death must have... That was rough, I'd imagine.
It was. do now, like the acoustic career that was made possible because I was in Iron Man, you know. Yeah. And Al, when that started, was very accepting of that, very supportive of it. He loved that I was doing it. You know, a lot of guys would have thought, well, I don't know about this. It's just going to take you away from Iron Man. And he wasn't like that at all. I think he knew that it would. But at the same time, he was very supportive of it. And that was very important. When I started writing books, you know, he was very supportive of that. He's like, do your thing, man. He's totally behind it 100%. And, we just did a road trip this weekend, and stories of Al were very prominent in the car, driving up and driving back. You know, Al's very much a part of us. You know, we miss him, but...
Well, because everybody in Spiral Grave but Willie is from Iron Man, am I right?
Yeah. Basically, Willie hit me up about starting a band, and... I asked him who he had in his rhythm section, and he says, we're starting this from the ground up, so what do you suggest? I said, Lou and Mott. You know, Lou was already playing with me the acoustic gig. I mean, Mott was, you know, kind of in limbo.
And yeah, Lou played on your acoustic record I reviewed. You guys seem to have a really good chemistry, no matter what you do.
And, we didn't try to recapture Iron Man or continue Iron Man. This is very
Except
much
to play Crushing Doom like you did before.
Yeah, it's its own thing. But that being said, the chemistry and the vibe is very much like Iron Man. Everybody is just a team. It's about the song. It's not about how cool this part sounds or how cool the riff is or how cool the drums are. It's not about the pieces and parts. It's about the whole. And that's how it was with Iron Man. Nobody's trying to shine in any other way than just making the song great.
Yeah, you focus on writing good songs rather than having a hit record, which is a big difference in what separates the mainstream from the underground, unfortunately.
Right. I mean, everybody's just...
There's so many bands from all over the freaking world right now that are so under the radar, it's pathetic.
Right. Zed, oh my God, I got the new Zed record in advance of it about a week ago. And I saw them at Maryland Duke Fest last month, and just blew me away. And it's like, it's the age-old question, why aren't these guys more famous than they are? In this day and age, we know why, but we got them, and that's what's important.
Yeah, it's kind of more meaningful when it's so amazing, but most of the normies can't even comprehend its existence, let alone try to like it.
Right. Oh. So I like floating under the radar. I kind of laugh at people who complain that there's no good new music. Yeah, there is. You're relying on FM radio to provide it to you. And this day and age, there's no reason for that. It's too easy to find new music. I mean, it's as simple as YouTube. It's just
I noticed, too, when you tell people... And they say there's no good music anymore, good new music. And I say, no, there's a ton of bands that are like this or like that. And they're like, no way, that I show them, and they automatically don't like it because they're already programmed to, like, shun it because it's not something they heard on the radio. And it's like,
It's like we were having a conversation on the drive yesterday about Tony Martin era Black Sabbath.
Oh yeah, I wanted to get to that with you too.
And in the late 80s, I was dating a girl who was a huge Sabbath freak. Original lineup only. She thought Iron Man was the greatest song ever written. Made a 90-minute mixtape of nothing but Iron Man over and over and over. Would not touch anything that Ronnie did, none of that she wanted anything to do with. But when Headless Cross came out, I bought it on cassette, had it in the car, picked her up to go out, blasted that in the car, and she's like, wow, this is awesome, what is this? And I reached in the glove box and pulled out the case. Sabbath. She didn't like it. And it's the same principle. The people are programmed, pre-programmed, that they're not going to like something unless it's this. It's like, why can't you just like it for what it is? Who cares who played on it or who didn't play on it? Or
who cares
if it's something on a major label or if it's something that a bunch of guys recorded?
I could go from listening to Woody Guthrie to freaking Celtic Frost without even skipping a beat. Like, that's just how my music taste is. Which is really scary for some people. I don't know why.
People feel like everything should fit in a compartmentalized and fit into a box and be similar, and they can't understand. And being a metalhead, I don't know if it's the same with other genres, but it seems like when you like metal, people think that's all you like, and they get surprised to find out, oh, wow, you like CCR, or, oh, wow, a few months ago, I went on this huge Cyndi Lauper kick, where I spent a Saturday afternoon just surfing YouTube and looking at old Cyndi Lauper documentaries and Tonight Show appearances. And that's something that was prominent when I was a teenager. And,
I get looking at stuff for nostalgia, but I don't listen to I don't look at Britney Spears videos because I grew up with that stuff out. I didn't listen to that then, and I don't listen to that now, and I've always gotten shit for it. So I'm kind of a little bit more, I don't like pop music, and I never really have. And it's not a slight against anybody in pop music or what they do. You know, Lady Gaga has great theatrics and great talent in her own right, but I can't stand the style of music that she performs. That's just how,
Every now and then you'll get, like, a Howard Stern appearance where it's her on piano and she's just killing it. You're like, why can't she
do that instead?
Yeah.
No, I like so much obscure stuff, too, that nobody else can even stand to listen to because they're not seasoned,
Right.
Trying to show someone Funeral Doom who listens to Avenged Sevenfold doesn't really go well.
Right. No, my tastes have always been so broad to where people will say, oh, if you like this band, you must love this band. It's like, nah, I don't really care for them. Well, they sound so much alike. It's like, yeah, but there's more to music than just what it sounds like. There's the vibe, there's the content, there's the themes,
People can laugh at me because I'm such a big lover of Doom and such a big supporter of it when I say this, but I don't like Airborne because if I want to listen to AC/DC, I'll listen to AC/DC.
Right.
But Doom isn't like that because none of the bands sound the same. There might be similarities, but Electric Wizard doesn't sound anything like Sleep, and Sleep was a big influence on them. So,
it's people that don't listen to the nuances. They hear heavy guitars, they hear a tempo, and they just lump it that it all sounds alike. People who are devout metalheads might say the same thing about modern country.
People who are metalheads will, Slayer idiots, literally will look at me funny because, I don't have a Slayer patch on my jacket.
Right. But there are people out there who would say that Slayer and Metallica are clones of one another. Just because they're playing, when you listen to early stuff, they're playing fast, blast beats, people just think it all sounds the same.
I honestly would probably say that Slayer's probably one of my least favorite bands out of that. Not saying I don't like them. I just feel like once you hear Rain and Blood and South of Heaven, you don't need to hear anything else kind of thing.
From that whole subgenre, you can give me Testament, and I'd be happy with just that. That's not to slate anybody else.
I'm not a huge thrash fan, but I would go as far to say, Creator for me.
Yeah.
And they're kind of similar to Slayer, but there's a difference when it's a similar genre and a similar style, but people also, they love Metallica and listen to Avenged Sevenfold. I'm like, they're just a wussy version.
Right.
And that's
they're like a decaf version.
Metallica is just one of those bands over here that just, everybody and their sister likes them. And it's just eh. I don't like, they haven't made a good record since 1989. Oops, did I say that? Yeah.
But see, that's why I love Testament, because Testament just keeps putting out quality stuff again and again and again.
Yeah.
And they don't really suffer, you know, there's that people, I don't like Metallica because their sound changed, and then you have people, I don't like Motorhead or I don't like AC/DC because everything sounds the same.
Yeah.
To me, at least Testament kind of fits in a niche where they're not just regurgitating the same thing over and over.
Look at Judas Priest.
Yeah.
Each of their albums had a completely different sound and vibe, except maybe Defenders sounds very similar to Screaming, but still there's differences. It was always a progression, a step up.
Right.
I even like Turbo and Ram It Down, and most people hate those records.
Yeah, we had a big Turbo discussion today.
How'd that go? Because that could go one or two ways.
Bro, guys, what was that all about? I said, well, that was cashing in on the
PMRC, but I like that song. I'm sorry, I did grow up with hair metal, but... I don't like White Lion.
They came up too. I had a roommate a few years ago. It's like a year older than me, and he'd be like, how can you be our age and not love White Lion? I'd say, how can you be our age and not love Sabbath?
I mean, I interviewed Phil Lewis last on the phone from LA Guns, and they're lumped in with that, but they had balls.
Right.
There were hair bands with balls, but after a while you had shit like White Lion and Extreme. While they're great musicians, there's some great guitar playing, even though it's wussified pomp rock, but...
Oh, yeah, like Red Beach, you know.
The guy from White Lion's actually a great guitar player, and When the Children Cry is a great song, but that's not necessarily a full-on hair metal song. My God. I love it. I recently started watching Beavis and Butthead again, and I love that they put the dorkiest, lamest wannabe kid in the Winger shirt.
Yes.
Did that really piss off Kip Winger?
You know, I've heard different things about that. I like to think that, I mean, I'm sure there were some people who were very upset about it, and I'm sure that there were some people who thought it was hilarious.
I think it's hilarious. If he had a Kiss shirt on, Kiss wouldn't have had a problem with it, because I think publicity is good publicity.
Right, Gene would have just wanted a cut.
Yeah.
We drove by a convenience store today in just some little town in New Jersey that was called Walmart. And my son got a picture of the sign, and Paul Stanley prepares for life after Kiss.
I have to say, I don't know if you care enough to even try to read Paul Stanley's book, but I read Ace's, I read Gene's, and I read Paul's, and Ace and Paul are very similar, but Paul was more straight edge, obviously, which we know. But you can even see with Paul, like, Paul's even said in interviews, if there ever was a Kiss-themed restaurant, I don't want anything to do with it.
Right.
And that speaks volumes, actually. I have to give credit to Paul because he admits his own shortcomings and the way he was back in the day. He was really self-conscious until he did Phantom of the Opera in the late 90s, because he was born without an ear.
Right. I think deep down inside, I said this today, we were talking about Paul and Kiss and everything. I said, I think down inside, Paul feels really fortunate that he was afforded the opportunity to do the things he's done and live the life he has. He came from very humble beginnings, and I think he's one of those guys that looks back and says, man, I'm a lucky son of a bitch.
Yeah, him and Gene both do. I think all of the members of Kiss really do in their own ways. I really do feel more on Ace's side than anybody's, even though they all say, oh, well, he was so coked out. But he was the musician, and even Eddie Kramer said he was the most talented. But all four original members of KISS were not the most amazing musicians, but the chemistry they had really worked. Like,
and they worked their asses off.
They did.
They worked their asses off to put that show together. Everybody talks about...
Not everybody had pyro before KISS started every show.
Right.
You know what I mean? Before KISS, pyro was very rare. After KISS, then it started to be more common to use that shit.
Yeah.
You know, which people take for granted, just like people think the Beatles are overrated these days because they don't realize what they came from to do what they did and how they affected everything now.
Right. Now, KISS will always have a special place in my heart because they were the band that I saw and said, this is what I want to do. Now, that's not to say that if it hadn't been them, it wouldn't have been somebody else, but it was them, so.
Yeah, I mean, the same thing happened for me just hearing the music and the crowd and the energy, and that says something. I mean, they wrote good songs, and they have throughout their career. I mean,
right.
Their 80s stuff can be hit or miss, but there's some really good shit in there. The Elder's a really good record, and they might say I have brain damage, and that's fine. But, I mean, even Asa said he likes the record. It just was a bad time to release it.
Right, right. They were on a decline. It was not a good time to try an experimental record.
Even Dynasty was good other than the disco hit, which when they did it live, it didn't sound disco, so I don't mind it live, but... Like, Unmasked, and then, which was even more poppy, but it's still good, and it still sounds like KISS.
Right.
And then they do a concept album.
Right. If they had done Creatures of the Night when they did The Elder, it would have been, things would have been very different, I think, because...
If they would have been able to move up to that level, I think Ace would have been happier, too, and might not have left.
Yeah.
He had no one on his side because Eric Carr wasn't a full member.
Right. Right, yeah, when Peter left, Ace was just kind of left out to get bullied, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. I mean, even Gene, I got a book that he put out called 27, and I thought it was going to be horrendous, but it actually... I don't... want to say that maybe he's completely different, but he's finally realized and has rebutted on a lot of things that he said based on evidence that's presented to him, which is surprising, I know. But he basically said unless his son didn't suffer from depression, that he wouldn't really have understood that you can be sick in the mind like he could in the body in that way. And I realized that he even admits it's from my generation. So I have to give him some credit for at least doing that. Because that's a hell of a thing.
I mean, you can't, in any seriousness, question how freaking smart Gene is.
Yeah, there's no doubt. He's a great businessman. He's a great bass player, actually. I'd go as far to say that. People might laugh, but he plays a style that I've only really ever heard Paul McCartney and a lot of those early 60 guys play.
Yeah, and that was the generation...
For wearing all that armor and those boots and wagging his tongue and breathing fire and, like, moving around like he still does and not miss a note and the way he plays, how can you knock that?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
He'll admit he has a big ego, so you can't really say anything he hasn't heard before. He's not going to care.
Well, you don't get in the position he's in by letting people's opinions and thoughts
affect you.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure you've had your share. I mean, not to get personal, but you shared a message the other day that you got sent when you did an album called Jesus, the Devil, and the Deed and wrote a book.
be very opinionated, and what was your mother think of this? You know, when the Jesus Devil Deed novella came out, I had got an unsolicited message. And I remember when you were a young boy coming to church with your mother, such a good kid, so respectful, and your mother would not approve of this, he wrote. And my first knee-jerk thought was to just shred this person. But I thought, now that you're kind of becoming what they're accusing you of being.
Yeah.
So I said, well, you know, it's funny. I said, in the closing thoughts of the novella, I addressed what I thought my mother would have thought of this book. My mother was a church-going, God-fearing woman who would have fought the world for me. You know, the long and short of it is my mother would have told this person to, you know, mind their own fucking business.
Yeah, but, you're not stacking bodies or sacrificing them to the devil and drinking their blood. You're writing songs and books and stories that are scary. What the hell?
But I said I addressed what I thought my mother would have thought of it. You know, if you're interested to know, you know, here's a link to buy the book. And that was the end of it.
Don't knock it. Like, she's not going to prevent you from gaining knowledge.
Right.
You know, and obviously, you know.
Well, you know, I remember growing up, and Kiss was evil, and Kiss stood for Knights in Service to Satan, and all this other creative nonsense.
I heard that in foster care. My foster parents believed that shit. They were, like, stuck on the 80s satanic panic shit, I swear to God.
Right.
Ironically.
And I remember going to the Kiss reunion tour, and we're, you know, standing down there on the floor, and, you know, I'm looking around at everyone, whoever the opening act was, I don't even remember, I didn't care, we're looking around at everyone just before the house lights dropped, and I said, look at everybody here, I said, what's the common denominator here? And my buddy says, what? I said, everyone's smiling and happy, I said, you know, this positive energy.
Yeah.
I said, how can that be evil? Everyone's just here in the spirit of music and having a good time.
It's the closest thing to the old ancient pagan festivals that mankind attended.
Right.
An open-air festival at a concert, it gives you that same kind of religious devotion as you would to, you know, the gods, you know. It's just, it's a holy communion in its own right, going to a concert, like, it's pure. Like, it really is. I don't know how to explain that when most of it's like, you know, the famous Kiss classic, I want to put my log in your fireplace.
Right.
Like, but it's really pure at heart. And it's hard to explain that to people who don't get it. It takes a little bit of understanding and, you know.
By the religious community, and they're smiling and just, you know.
I mean, Bill Ward's talked about how emotional and still cries about seeing young kids when War Pigs would come on, the guys in the wheelchairs would be hoisted up because it was like speaking for them, and like the Vietnam vets that were, you know, they were like just, it was overwhelming, and it's like, that's negative, like.
Right.
They were speaking truth and trying to lead humankind in a better way, and I can't believe we haven't learned, because all those songs are still relevant.
Right.
That's why they're popular.
Right, they're as relevant now as when they were written, you know?
I've listened to Woody Guthrie, I've listened to Robert Johnson, I've listened to Bob Dylan, I've listened to The Grateful Dead, I've listened to Black Sabbath. They all kind of say the same things in completely different ways and different styles and different contexts. And it's all stuff that's, like, 30, 40, 50 years old, and it's still relevant now as it was then. And it makes me really question, what are we doing here?
Right. You know, in one sense, it's amazing that it is, but it gives you an appreciation for the vision that these artists had, but it's sad that it's still relevant, you know? We're not learning anything. Regressing.
Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon I've listened to since I was a kid, and you think I would have played it out, but I still listen to it in the Doom Side of the Moon version, too. I blast occasionally as well, because it's a great version of that.
but it's just about a world gone mad. And it's still, that's how I feel.
Right.
Pretend to be indoctrinated enough to fit in.
Right, exactly.
Oh, my God. It's just, Woody Guthrie once said that folk music was supposed to comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable. And I'd say that's the same for rock and roll and, you know. Was punk an influence on you at all?
Not really. I really didn't get into punk. I'm still not really versed in it. I think it was always because, being the type of singer I am, I've always been into more melodic, that kind of thing. So no, it really didn't play a part. I'm still unfamiliar with a lot of it. If I ever were to really discover it, get into it, it would be just that, just stuff I've never exposed myself to yet.
I am well versed in that, so I can show you a couple different like subgenres in punk that you can kind of hear that influence some doom bands. And Celtic Frost was hugely influenced by some punk bands and goth rock bands, too. So.
Right.
But I was just curious because there is such a DIY aspect to this all. And St. Vitus, I mean, they were on Black Flag's label, SST, for years.
Right.
Black Flag were actually big fans of them. My War is a really slow record that influenced grunge, too, hugely. Which, I've got to ask, what are your thoughts on grunge? I don't feel it's really all that much different from, like, the doom and stoner metal scenes.
When grunge hit, I thought, this is just 70s rock come back around. And everybody says grunge killed hair metal, grunge killed metal in general. And I said, no, grunge just came along and pushed the dead bodies out of the road. You know, metal,
the ones clinging by their fingernail polish. It's still funny how it all happened to the least suspect band out of all the bands from that area.
Right.
Like, Nirvana were the complete oddballs, and my younger brother, not quite as good as everyone else, band that knocked Michael Jackson off the number one spot. That's what people forget. This band of weird-looking, disheveled nobodies from the Pacific Northwest are the number one rock group in the fucking country. What? The number one group, like,
right.
Overnight, man. That's kind of what punk did in the 70s to weed out the dinosaurs that were affecting the prog rock.
Yeah.
I mean.
But no, the first time when grunge really started digging in, I thought this was 70s rock again. You know, it's just, angstier lyrics.
Yeah.
And stuff like Alice in Chains. Soundgarden, again, with the nice melodic voices and that kind of thing, that was some within that genre that I gravitated to.
Oh, yeah. So you weren't, there's, like, the metaler side of grunge, it seems, and there's a punkier side, too.
Yeah, it was kind of like any other genre, a lot of different acts got lumped together.
Well, genre labels are created by the media. I think the term grunge was quoted by Mark Arm from Mudhoney and Green River, which are two really good grunge bands that are kind of more under the radar because they're not Nirvana or Soundgarden. But he said, our music's like pure grunge, pure shit. And then they just took that word and applied it to everything from that.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, stoner rock, I mean, there's so many bands in that genre that have similar styles, but also sound completely different.
Yeah.
You know, Love Battery was a grunge band, and they have a total 60s warm psychedelia, almost like if Oasis had more balls and, musical
right.
sense than, because we know they're hardcore and fucking nuts, but their music was kind of more polished.
Right.
And you had, like, Soundgarden, who were, like, 70s hard rock, you had Alice in Chains, which was just like, I think Alice in Chains is really unique in the way they did the vocal harmonies too, because
right.
I can't think of anybody else that did that. The Screaming Trees are one of my favorites from that, actually. I think Mark Lanegan was the best singer out of all of them.
Yeah, I'm not real versed on their stuff either, but I am aware of them.
They're kind of somewhere between like Alice in Chains, but with more of like a Doorsy, mellow kind of vibe.
Right.
I don't know if you know Mad Season, but the singer for the Screaming Trees sings a couple of the songs with Blaine. Kind of, yeah. They're more like Doors trippy, if anything. They have a psychedelic element like that, but it's not, you know.
They don't beat you to death with it.
No. It's kind of more of a dark side. Like a song called Butterfly that's like, broken wings, you're gonna die, I'm sick and I want to go home. But it's like kind of trippy sounding upbeat with Wawa and Fuzz. You see what I mean in the Doorsy way?
Right, right.
A good smoky rasp voice over top, you know. That's what I like about him.
Yeah, gotcha.
But yeah, man. So Spiral Grave. You put out a single, Nothing. When's the album due? So the reception's been good and quick, because I've been, like, friends with you even before you fully started the band. You were still doing your acoustic stuff with Lou.
We were offered the Salt of the Earth to release the single and play New England Stoner Doom before they even heard anything. They hadn't heard a note of music from us. And were offering us stuff. I was like, do you want to hear something first? And shot us some rehearsal recordings, and they were like, oh, hell yeah, we want this.
The rehearsal recording of Nothing so raw and primitive, I love it. Like,
yeah.
I still always love that. Like, I love the Sabbath basement tapes a little bit more than the album versions.
Right.
Just because that basement dense acoustics.
Right.
I've always said that's where you get the best acoustics for this kind of shit. Although I wouldn't mind recording a Funeral Doom album in somewhere like Centralia, Pennsylvania, or like Chernobyl. I feel like that would be like the perfect area to write like a Funeral Doom record, which is just like Doom, just slowed down to 16 beats per minute.
Right. So it's like the Working Man video on YouTube that slowed down to like half speed.
Yeah.
So awesome, slowed down.
Well, I like Funeral Doom because of the atmospherics. They channel like a Pink Floyd type of vibe, like in the atmospheres, with all the gaps in between the notes. It's one of those things that's really rare for anybody to really like, but I do. Like, I don't know if you know any of those bands, but like, have you heard Bellwitch or?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so then you know what I mean, and that's what Funeral Doom is. Wouldn't that be perfect to record in, like, Centralia, Pennsylvania? Just the agony and the sorrow and the isolation?
Exactly. Just the vibe you get there. It totally lends itself.
If I ever hit the lottery, I'd try to buy an old rundown church and convert, like, the altar into, like, where I'd have old analog equipment because I know it's cheap right now. And just open up, like, a recording studio that's in an old abandoned church.
Right.
The wood floors would be perfect for the sound and the reverb and everything.
Oh, yeah, that nice natural reverb instead of dialing it in.
People think that's morbid, but I'm like, no, that's the perfect place for any kind of inspiration and any kind of real artistic sense. You know?
It's like singers that go in to do their tracks and candelabras to get that mood for inspiration, you know.
Steven Tyler always has a scarf.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big
suppose.
I mean, there's just always some ritual. I always wondered what Ian Gillan had in the studio when they were recording Born Again with Sabbath. Because
I love that record.
I don't care.
We listened to that on the way out yesterday. Lou was like, the BMP3 player law. Told him I had a bunch of Sabbath. You don't have Born Again, do you? I said, oh, hell yeah. And we listened to, the first disc, the album, and then the live disc.
Yeah, I was going to ask you if you have the deluxe edition like I do.
Yeah.
Dude, the way he did the song Black Sabbath at that live performance is perfect, because he's right in between Ozzy and Dio.
Right.
Perfectly. Why didn't that last longer? Perfect Strangers was great, but come on.
I know. They waited another year or two, so we got one more Sabbath record.
Yeah. Like, come on.
But we got a good record out of it. Only one that sounds very basement-y, but...
Although I do have to say that the remastered version and the deluxe edition that's included with the live disc, that sounds a hell of a lot better than the original mix I've heard before.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes.
I couldn't stand the album before, but I had to keep giving it more and more chances. And when there was an HD version that was the deluxe, and I heard it, I bought it on eBay immediately.
Right.
Like, it's just funny how that fucking sucks. Ian Gillan still says that he has some tape somewhere of the way it sounded before they got damaged.
Man.
Like, because we have the unmixed versions, but he has, like, the way the album was supposed to sound somewhere. He said when he finds it, he'll release it.
Yeah. I mean, God, imagine Mark Burns had been on the board for that.
Or Tom Kernel.
Tom Allen. Think of how Heaven and Hell and Mob Rule sound, and imagine that applied to Born Again.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine the sound from, like, even, like, I always like Eddie Kramer's production.
Yeah.
Can you imagine even with that kind of sound?
Right, just clarity.
Yeah.
Just the clarity and the crispness, you know, it doesn't have to be overproduced. I think that the songs on that album and the nature of those songs would have been hurt by a slick production. It needed to
extremely. It had to be raw and aggressive. I mean, everything they were dealing with. Even the artist, I read the liner notes in the story. The artist who did the album art literally got offered to do it, like, on a crunch time where he literally had to go and buy the cheapest, purest speed that you could buy in London at the time, and him and a mate just stayed up all night and all the next day doing it. Like, and even doing, like, writing the lyrics on the lyric sheet and the medieval text. They did that all, like, within, like, a 24-hour binge of fucking speed. So I feel like even the artwork reflects the sound of the album, which is very aggressive, and I don't blame him after dealing with Ozzy and all that, and then Dio. I mean,
yeah, the way that fell apart, yeah, definitely.
Ozzy didn't help things with Dio, I don't think.
Nah.
But so, are you going to do another acoustic record, man?
I am. I have 10 out of the 12 songs that will be on the album, guitars recorded. Then I'll start vocals. Rob's going to do some percussion. Then we'll get Lou recorded. I'm not rushing it. I haven't done probably sometime this fall, and then probably like a mid-year release 2020.
Did you check that with your weed manager next year?
Right, exactly. But I started recording that at the end of June. I do everything here at home, do it yourself.
Oh, yeah.
Let Lou hear the 10 songs that have been recorded. We put some percussion into it. I've dropped the vocals in from the demos, synced them up, so that the songs have And Lou loved it. He's like, wow, this stuff is really just dark and mean. So he's you know, real happy about how the songs sound. The prospect of getting to record and starting to play these songs live and everything. So
that's awesome.
So yeah, that's coming along well.
I'm sorry I couldn't catch you when you came up to Rochester. I believe you played with Saints and Winos, too.
Yes, yes.
They're good friends of mine that I think I may have mentioned that. Joe's a good friend of mine from Saints and Winos.
Yeah,
every time something happens down there that I'm able to go to, something happens where I can't. That's happened twice. I missed out on seeing the Obsessed with them. But Joe's such an alright guy, he gave Wino one of my reviews, and Wino put it in his road case and read it a little and said, this is good, man. So, just to know that Joe went out of his way to at least do that, even though he didn't get to hang out like he wanted to, I still, you know, I still will definitely do that. It's just I just put over like $1,100 into my car, and now I find that because I replaced the radiator cap, which wasn't get the right amount of pressure, when I put the new cap on and the pressure went back to normal, it created a crack in my lower radiator hose.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that fun?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I get a new AC put in mine about 2 months ago, and it is definitely not cheap.
Nope. Well, that's what I get for having a late 2000s era freaking Mopar.
Right. Well, their next year should be busy. The new solo record, the Spiral Grave debut.
Definitely send me a copy of that for with the EPK when that's on its way.
Yeah, it'll definitely be a busy year. I'm sort of, as far as my solo work and my writing, have sort of developed a pattern where even numbered years I put out an album, odd numbered years I put out a book. So
nice. And you have a new book out. Can you tell us a little bit about your books, what you write, and what this latest one is? And
absolutely. The new one's called Down the Rabbit Hole. Rabbit, like Cujo, not rabbit.
Yeah.
It's a collection of short stories. It's on poetry. The first book in 2015, Tales from the Screaming and Mad, was a short story collection. And then the second book was a novella in 2017, Jesus Devil Deed, which was inspired by one of my songs. When I wrote the first book, I thought, this is a one and done, just something that I did that I kind of always wanted to do, and I did it, cool. Didn't think I'd ever write another one. But then when I wrote the song, Jesus the Devil the Deed, I said, I want to know this whole story. There's more to this story than what's conveyed in the song. So I wrote that novella 2 years ago. I kind of figured, okay, that's that. Early last year, an artist from Denmark, Karina Olsen, she was familiar with Iron Man and my solo work and everything, and she sent me some drawings, and I decided I'm going to write stories based on these drawings, what I see in these drawings, and that kind of got the creativity going again and led to this new book. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, so something always comes along that tickles that gorge to get the ideas going again. So
save me that signed copy. Money's a little tight right now, but I definitely...
No, absolutely.
Oh, man. This has been fun, man.
It's a fun thing to do. You know, I just sit here in my chair and have a ball game on or something and just have at it. You know, I'm not Faulkner or Hemingway or anything like that, but...
No, you're not trying.
Right.
You're just doing it for the sake of creating, which, I mean,
right.
I write poetry, you know, I do, like, you know, my journalism and stuff, and I write lyrics, but I don't have the ability to have, like, my creativity comes in spurts, but when it comes, I do it, and it's incredible, and it's quick.
Right.
It's never forced. It just comes. I don't know where. I don't know why. It just does. So I don't feel like I could have the same creativity streak about the same subject for, like, 200, 300 pages. I wish I could, but I just don't feel like I have the ability to broaden it out that much, you know?
Well, you know what he said about theory, it was one and done. That was what happened after Rot Gut came out. You know, Rot Gut was, I never intended to do an acoustic album or a solo album. I just started doing songs, and it led to that. And, you know, I figured, okay, Rot Gut, cool, you know, put this out. Shows, and I figured, you know, we'll pick Iron Man back up soon, but then Al's health deteriorated, and that never happened, but I didn't think, I thought that would be it, but then the ideas kept coming,
yeah.
And then Go to the Devil came out, and then it wasn't long after Go to the Devil was released that ideas started coming again. Like, I sit here now and think, oh my god, what am I going to do for another album if that ever comes along, but...
A never-ending circle, huh?
Yes. Well, I'm good with that, you know. One project is finished, and you move on to the next one. I had a friend say, when do you just sit and relax? I said, well, this is how I relax, you know?
Yeah.
You know, working on this stuff, it's not work to me. It's, you know, it's you feel accomplished and be productive. So that's what I do to chill out. It's creating.
You can never turn it off.
No, no. It's not always on to the degree you'd like it to be, but it's still there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes an idea will come, and you just got to sort of just let it stew for a little while until the, you know, the grape becomes a pearl in the oyster, you know?
Yeah, that's exactly how it works for me. I've still got riffs. I can't find lyrics that are good enough to put with it. Because when it's right, I'll know it.
Exactly.
You know.
I have about 5 songs that I'm going to record that I'm not going to put on the album because I wrote a boatload of songs this time. And I want to go ahead, you know, I'm doing it, record them. Nothing may ever happen with them, but you never know. Some Art and Auto might say, hey, we're doing a compilation. We need a new song from you. Okay, here you go.
Oh, for sure, you know.
Yeah. You know, we do a Snowblind cover, and I'm going to record that, and we'll release that, because I'm not going to jump through the hoops to get the rights to do it, but I just want a copy of it, you know, just for posterity.
Yeah.
And then if somebody ever comes along, we're doing a new Sabbath tribute record, you know, and you want to submit, yep, here you go.
Done. No, I feel you, man. You guys doing Snowblind, you gotta let me hear that.
Oh, that all came about by accident. When Lou, you know, expressed interest in playing with me, we started getting together doing rehearsals. I just started doodling Snowblind, and he started playing along, and I said, hey, we should do this. So I actually came home and learned the solo. It's the first time I ever sat and learned a guitar solo. Because I said, I'm not going to just doodle an Iommi solo. You know,
yeah.
I'm going to have to learn it.
Respectfully, yeah.
It always went over big. Now, it was funny that the few places we played in Europe, it didn't really go over big. They were much more into us doing my stuff, you know. There were even some venues where I had to sign a waiver or sign a contract that stated I would not play any cover music. But the places we did play Snowblind, no, it was kind of lukewarm. You know, they were much more into the original stuff, which was fine with me.
Yeah. Naturally, I mean, that's a big pat on the back.
Right.
Oh, man, this has been fun, huh?
Yes, indeed. I got a kid eyeballing me. As if to say, when are you going to cook me dinner?
Yeah, I know that look. Well, mine's at the age where she doesn't want to eat, and the other one's newborn, still bottle fed. She lets you know when she needs to eat.
Oh, yeah. about that?
Oh, no. They're young, and they're learning good. The older one, she'll be six, and she skateboards and listens to Kiss and the Beatles and likes unicorns, so well-rounded, man.
Well, good deal, brother. Thank you for this.
Oh, no problem, man. It was a blast. I love nerding about music. I don't really get to do that too often.
Right, right. You know? We always get to do it with a loser. That's nice to do with somebody else.
It's like that quote from Almost Famous, the real quality you spend is when you're talking with someone else who's uncool.
Right. All right, brother. Well, again, thank you.
No problem, dude. This has been awesome, and this will be up soon, and take care and keep me posted.
Yeah, will do. I'll always keep you informed of the crazy shit I have happening.
Oh, yeah. And feed Willie some damn tacos. They're like crack to him.
I don't want that job. You lose an arm.
Taco.
I know.
Maybe one day when the bubble bursts and you're all rock stars and I'm writing for Rolling Stone magazine, I could go on tour with you, Crazy Fox, and we can all have a blast.
Hell yeah. I'm way down with that.
All right, man. We'll take it easy.
You have a good evening.
You too, man.
Bye.
Later, brother. Bye.